This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Rodney. And may I say, just what an honour it is to finally get to see you, even though it's not in person. I've heard so much about you and just loved looking after not only your mum, but your dad as well. And
of course.
So, yeah, we had some great chats over the years, so great to be here.
Well, I have always been and suspicious of the chiropractic business, but that was the old Rodney. But, man, oh, man, did you help my mum and my dad so well. And so then I've had Sarah on, and she is so wonderful. And so I'm starting I'm totally on board, but I still don't quite understand it all. And I thought, well, I'll start again learning all about it with you. I don't imagine that you're in the fourth form and they say, oh, what are you going to do, Jeff? Oh, I'm going to be a chiropractor. So how did you become a chiropractor?
Yeah, it's a good story, and I love telling the story, and I say it quite often because I see people like me in my clinic probably on a weekly basis, people who are probably they've sought care all over the place in the traditional healthcare system, and it's failed them, and quite often they come to me or come to chiropractors as a last resort, simply because of what you just said. There's this misrepresentation about us or a misunderstanding about what the chiropractic profession really is. And so people then think, oh, well, I'll go to the chiropractor. That's a last resort. I've tried everything else. And we see those people every week. The relationship between us and medicine and us and physios nowadays is much, much better. It's very, very good. But certainly back in the day when I first was struggling with low back pain, I didn't even know what a chiropractor was. So I go right back to 1983, and this is where my story starts. And so I grew up in a small town, Tokoroa, in the South Waikato. I was born in Petaruru, so I'm born and bred South Waikato. Loved it down there. Went to Forest View High School. Found out quite early that I was actually fairly good at rugby. I was mad keen on it. We lived on a farm out there at the Kinleith Farms, and I'd just go outside for hours and hours and just kick a ball around. And so through school, I'd make the roller mills rep team. I went to Forest View High School. And in the fourth form, it's funny that you said the fourth form actually, Rodney, because it was in the fourth form that I actually made the first 15, which nowadays is year 10. So, yeah, quite unheard of back in the day.
Were you little? Were you little and like, were you a big kid or average kid?
No, I was blessed with my dad's genes and even my mum's side. Her uncles were big boys, so I was blessed with big thighs. I could run fast, and so I was quite lucky.
You would be 14 playing with 17 and potentially 18-year-olds.
Yeah, absolutely, and I was very lucky because the guy inside me was a guy called Ian Foster.
Oh, wow.
Who, as most people, if they understand rugby, knows that he coached the All Blacks last year to the World Cup. So Fozzie at that stage was a seventh former, so he was a good 3 years older than me. And he looked after me. I played immediately outside him at second five. And so from there, I made the Waikato under-16 team. And in 1983, I was captain of the Waikato under-16 team. And then from there, they picked a North Island under-16 team, and I was made captain of the North Island under-16 team. We flew down
just
to Christchurch.
Just interrupting, Jeff, just interrupting.
Yeah, yeah.
What are they looking for to choose a captain?
I think it's just someone who led by example, someone who would talk at the right times. I guess I was just a natural leader in any group I'm in. I'm chatty. And for me, it was around, leading by example, doing, actions and words, etc.
Yeah. And the respect of the teammates, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And rallying around. At that age, it wasn't really all about tactics and a game plan or anything like that. It was more just around being at the forefront, making the right decisions on the field. And I was a captain all the way through. I went under-18s, Waikato Colts, even senior rugby teams. I was captain. I was captain New Zealand Sevens in 1993. So that was just something that fell upon my shoulders, and I just accepted it and embraced it. And
To play for New Zealand for the Sevens and to be the captain must be a phenomenal feeling.
Yeah, it was an amazing feeling. And it's only really at my age looking back that I really appreciate it. You know, at the time, it's just something that's bestowed upon you and you just accept it and you just run with it. But, you know, that was a huge honour. And looking back, you know, I'm very proud of what I did. But at the same time, when I talk about my story, I think I promised a lot but delivered in the end very little simply because of the injuries that I had as well. And again, just going back to that 1984, I was selected to captain the New Zealand under 17 team. And prior to that, I played a pre-season game for my local club's under 21 team and I broke my leg. And so I was denied the black jersey back then in 1984, just age 17. So that was quite devastating. But this sets me on the right path, and I'm a big believer in the universe. And, you know, things are meant to test you. And at the time, obviously, the world was caving in. You know, I'd missed out on a black jersey and missed out on my opportunity to captain New Zealand under-17s, but there was a path that I was meant to take. And so I remember then the rehab, you know, 6 weeks on crutches, and I remember getting the cast off my leg and looking down at my legs and seeing that my left leg was half the size of my right leg. Wow. It had just wasted away. And so back in those days, obviously 17, I think I went to a couple of physio sessions and, you know, I could squat, I could bend down and, you know, I could run. So I was basically rehabbed. And but right from then, I just knew that structurally my body wasn't right. And, you know, while I still had my speed and I still had my strength, et cetera, I started suffering immediately just about from low back pain. And I remember going to the doctors and giving me some anti-inflammatories and being told that I had to strengthen my core. And, you know, I did all that religiously. But I remember all through my teenage years, just taking anti-inflammatories just to get through trainings, just to get through games. And all I was doing then, looking back, obviously now we know that I was just masking the symptom. And I wasn't correcting what was causing my low back pain. I was just taking anti-inflammatories. And so I got to a point then in 1992 when I was selected to play for New Zealand Sevens in Hong Kong. And that was a huge moment. It was finally, I'd got to wear the black jersey, and we had a really good team then. We were captained by Terry Wright, TJ Wright, the Auckland an All Black winger. We had Graham Bishop, who was the current All Black halfback then. He was in our team. We had Sevens legends and Eric Rush, Dallas Seymour, Pat Lamb. And there were two debutants in the team. There was myself and Glenn Osborne. And Os would obviously go on to establish himself as a very, very good fullback, one of the great All Black fullbacks. And so in 1992, I'm 25. I'm finally sort of trying to make myself in rugby again. I'd sort of gone off the rails a little bit after I'd broken my leg and finally gotten myself sorted, moved up into North Harbour country. I played for Waikato in 1989, played for North Harbour 1990 through to 92. But at the end of the 92 season, we were playing a sevens tournament in Hawaii. And I remember then that the low back just caught up with me and I couldn't walk. I couldn't stand up after a rugby game. I remember sitting down under a tree. We're all sitting around having a beer at the end of this tournament and I couldn't stand up. And I thought, oh, there's something going on here. So with a bit of help from the boys, got me back to the hotel, loaded up on some anti-inflammatories, had a few more beers and thought she'll be right, you know, as you do. But it wasn't right. And it just persisted right through and went to the physio, went back to doc, got more drugs, went to physio, had physio, stretching, you know, core strength, you name it. Changed physios. This went on for about 2 years. And in 1993, I tried to train again because the World Cup of Sevens was that year. And I tried to train, and of course I was just in so much pain, I could hardly run. And I made the New Zealand Sevens B team, and I was really disappointed that I'd missed out on the top side to go to the World Cup. But I made the New Zealand Sevens B team, and even then, I was not fit. I was not as fast and agile and as I was prior to this injury. The coach at the time was Gordon Titchens. He's a real hard taskmaster around fitness and discipline. And he installed me as the captain. And I failed miserably simply because I couldn't lead. I couldn't lead by example. And that was probably the lowest point in my rugby career where, you know, here I was bestowed with this huge honour, but I was battling to even be fit. And so that was something that would go down as probably the worst or the lowest point in my rugby career. And I came back to New Zealand.
It is absolutely heartbreaking because it's your life. It's your social standing, it's your passion, and you know how good you could have been.
Yep.
All gone.
Absolutely. Would have, could have, should have. And, you know, I didn't take those opportunities, and that was the thing. That's the thing that really motivates me nowadays as a rugby coach and as a chiropractor, even as a health and wellness coach, is, you know, making sure that people grasp those opportunities as they present themselves. And so back to 93, I had basically 2 years off rugby. I was told I'd never play rugby again by an orthopedic surgeon. I was 25 and at the height of my powers, I guess, and you know, really pushing forward to further myself in rugby and being told that I'd never play rugby again. And I thought I'd tried everything. I thought I'd done it all. I'd been to the doctor, I'd been to the physio, I tried the drugs, I'd been to the orthopedic surgeon. And so the last thing there was surgery, and I really didn't want to have surgery. So I basically retired from rugby then. I became a prison officer out at Puremarumo Prison. I thought that was going to be my career because prior to then, rugby was my life. And just by chance, I ran into an old rugby mate who...
Can I just interrupt you, Jeff?
That's all right.
What was it like being a prison officer at Puremarumo? I've been in there, visiting.
It was an awesome experience. I really enjoyed it. I had 2 years there, and I always took the attitude of we've got to rehabilitate these guys because they're going to get out and they may move into the house next door to my daughter or my wife or us or whatever. We want them to be better people. So I treated them with respect, and I got respect back. I saw a lot, really opened my eyes to people, because what would happen a lot of the times in there was that these guys were going, they were deliberately committing crimes so they could go back into prison, because in prison they got three meals a day, they got to see all their mates, they got a warm bed, they got education, they got the gym. And so to me, something was wrong within the system there. And so I've moved away from that. I can't make any changes there, but it certainly opened my eyes to how the crime or the justice system operates in New Zealand and indeed around the world.
Yes, good for you.
That was, again, just a part of a learning curve. It's all part of what makes us as men today, doesn't it, Robbie? Yes. You know, all your past, all your learnings. I always say that experience is the best teacher. It gives us the lessons first and the tests afterwards, you know. So I really enjoyed my time out there. I basically resigned myself to the fact that I'd never play rugby again. But on a chance meeting with an old rugby mate, he said, come and see our chiropractor. He's over here at this tent. This is at a rugby tournament. So I went over and I met this guy, Dr. Ed Timmings. Absolute legend. He took one look at me and he said, you know, he looked down at my feet. He saw that my right foot was splaying right out compared to my left. He saw that one hip was way higher than the other. He got me on the table. He felt around a bit, and then he got me on my side and he actually reset my pelvis. And I describe it as a sledgehammer hitting concrete. It was that loud. It was just a clunk, and it was like a surge of energy. And I was like, oh, my goodness, this feels really good. This is amazing. I actually felt like running. So I went into his clinic then later on that week, and we had a couple of sessions. And within probably about 3 or 4 weeks, I was back running again, striding out, actually running and feeling really good. and good enough to actually go back and play rugby again. And on a chance meeting, and again, this is the universe talking to us, I happened to go in on a specific day that another old rugby mate of mine, a guy, Ian Wood, was in there observing Ed in his practice in his clinic, and we ran into each other, and we hadn't seen each other for years. And Ian at this stage was the rugby coach over at Palmer College of Chiropractic in the USA. And he offered me a rugby scholarship right there on the spot. And so I just thought, why not? You know, I want to go and study this. This is chiropractic. This is cool. This has got me back playing again two or three years. And went home, spoke to my wife. She was a hairdresser at the time. I was a prison officer. It was a no-brainer, really. Let's just sell up everything we had. Let's just do it. We had support from our parents, both sides. We took out a bit of a loan, or a loan off the parents, obviously, and sold everything. And we had two suitcases. We had a suitcase each, and off we went. And I just immersed myself into the lifestyle there in the USA, in Davenport, Iowa, studied chiropractic. And while I was over there, obviously getting chiropractic care the whole time and playing rugby. And while I was on the scholarship, I was in charge then of three rugby teams and distributing scholarships. And there were full scholarships, three-quarter scholarships, half scholarships, quarter scholarships, and I had to distribute those at the same time as studying and trying to stay on schedule to graduate as a doctor of chiropractic. And in 1998, I'd had that three-year residency there in the United States, so I was eligible then to play for the USA national team. And again, I was selected to captain the Midwest team. We went down to the All-Stars, they called it, over there, the All-Star rugby tournament. And then from there, I was selected to play for the USA Eagles, and we toured Fiji in 1998. And I'll never forget Rodney sitting there, and they play the national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, and I'm sitting there with my hand over my heart and going through my head, tears are streaming down my face, because what was going through my head was this orthopedic surgeon telling me, you'll never play rugby again. And here I was, gifted with this amazing opportunity through rugby to become a doctor of chiropractic.
And represent the United States of America.
Absolutely, and effectively become a double international after representing New Zealand at seven. Yes.
In America, when you're playing sport, obviously rugby's not as big there as here, but I suspect that the Americans put more enthusiasm and the crowds go more wild there than here. They just love that stuff. I love it.
Yeah, I embraced it. It was pretty cool. I mean, even on the field, you get the whoops and the woos.
They just get into it.
Yeah, I remember one of the first games I played, one of the opposition made a bit of a break and our fullback came across and hit him in a beautiful tackle, copybook tackle, and then stood over him and just did the fist in the air. Whoa! Meanwhile, the play carried on. They recycled the ball and they scored. And I remember going up to him and saying, mate, that, you know, cut that out. You know, when the play stops, you can celebrate. But until then, it carries on.
Oh, and you met Sarah there.
Yes, so Sarah and Randall were there. They came probably about a year after us.
Wow.
And we helped form the Anzac Club over there. So it's been really cool keeping in touch with them. And obviously they've moved. They're Australians. They'd hate me saying they're Australians, but they're Australians. They've moved to New Zealand, and we've kept in touch. And it's been really cool seeing Sarah's journey as well, as an author and as a speaker.
She's a wonderful, wonderful,
highly respected and regarded here within the profession. So, yeah, we met them over there and kept in contact ever since.
Did you enjoy the training?
Loved it. Yeah, loved it. It was really hard. You got to understand that at that stage when I went to Palmer College, you know, I went to school early on to play rugby and eat my lunch. I was that guy. And when I left Forest View High School in Tokoroa, I left to study. I had a diesel mechanic apprenticeship. So I really had no clear goals or clear vision at that stage. So to come this far and be a 28-year-old studying chiropractic and having to go back and study my biologies, my physics and my chemistries, inorganic and organic chemistry. Wow. It was really, really tough. And so I just, it was virtually head down, bum up, never missed a class.
Where was the college that you went to?
It was in Davenport, Iowa, in the Midwest, USA, right about 3 hours south of Chicago. Real redneck territory, Rodney. It was real light and good fun.
Palmer College of Chiropractic.
Yes.
I've got it. I bought it up. How wonderful.
There you go.
Well, it's a big campus.
It was great. And you know, we as I said, being part of the rugby program there too, because the whole rugby team, we were all chiropractic students. So the college was purely for chiropractic students. There was nothing else was there. And so you'd walk around, get past chiropractic students all the time. So it was all hands-on there. We were able to, obviously, you had to practice when you're doing that chiropractic adjustment. You've got to practice on each other. And there were students readily available to offer their bodies up for science. So it was a great time.
Well, the webpage, and I'm just seeing the pictures of it, it looks amazing. And they had you on a rugby scholarship because they take sports seriously.
Yeah, so what happened was back in the early 60s, I think, the president of the college wanted to spread the word of chiropractic throughout the world, because obviously the Palmer College of Chiropractic was the original college where the first doctor of chiropractic graduated from and where the first chiropractic adjustment was delivered. So it's a very sentimental, monumental, historical university for chiropractors. And so back in the early 60s, Dr. Palmer decided that rugby would be the chosen sport to offer scholarships for, because he knew that if he gave scholarships for American football, they'd leave Palmer College and then they'd just go to the USA. So he wanted a truly global sport, and he chose rugby union. And so what happened then was that players would come from all around the world, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, the UK. They'd go to Palmer College, they'd study chiropractic, then they'd go back to their homes and then set up chiropractic clinics. And that's how chiropractic started spreading throughout the world. You'll find that most of the early chiropractors, or the olden day chiropractors, graduated from Palmer College and then they went back to their respective countries and spread the word of chiropractic.
So moving along, because I could spend all day on that campus by looking at it, but you get your degree.
Yep.
You're qualified.
Yep.
Then what?
So we came back to New Zealand, my wife and I, and our six-month-old baby, Grace.
So she's an American.
Yes, she's an American. Well, she's taken New Zealand citizenship. She hasn't taken the dual citizenship. She's 25 now. We came back. And we, as I said, we came back with a suitcase each. And so we had to then move in with my mother-in-law. And then I had to find somewhere to work. And thankfully, I knocked on the door of Dr. Alan Wade right here in Mairangi Bay. And he was looking for an associate at the time. And he had a little house at that time, and he had two rooms. And he gave me a room, and that was in May of 2000. And so he gave me a room, and I set about then trying to get the word out there that, hey, I'm here, I'm available, I'm ready to take patients. So I'd go and speak at conferences, at businesses, at schools. I'd do spinal screenings and assessments. And then one morning I went to set up at the Browns Bay Market at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning. I'd set up my gazebo, I'd get out my table, and I just set about talking to people and answering questions around chiropractic and what chiropractors do, how we can help, etc. And one day this little old lady came up and she grabbed my arm and she looked into my eyes and she said, "Do you think you can help me?" And I said, "Well, look, there's no guarantees that I can help. I don't guarantee anything." I says, "But my job is to make sure that the body's working as effectively as it can, and then the power that made the body will heal the body. And that's the whole premise of chiropractic. And so I had a chat to her, and she came into clinic, and that was my first meeting with Margaret Hyde. And,
really?
And she I'll never forget her, because the look of desperation on her face, Rodney, she had been trying all sorts, and she was sore, she was achy, her quality of life was diminished, and, you know, that voice, you know, do you think you can help me? And I wish I could have just said, oh, absolutely, 100%, I'll guarantee it. But you can't do that, and you know, without a proper assessment, without a proper look. So when she came into clinic, we took x-rays, and we did a full physical exam, and we just started working on the body, just, you know, unleashing the body's potential, just correcting some tight muscles, getting joint movement back again. And slowly but surely, every time she came in, she'd report that some positive changes, and she'd always have a hug. We always have a hug every time she came in, and every time she left with a hug. And then she brought Phil in, and Phil became a patient as well. And we had some great chats and great times. But I was, you know, really, really happy to be able to help her. And, you know, she came over the bridge there, I think, for maybe 10 years, 10 or 15 yes. years. I yes. can't remember. But she'd pop over for her little tune-up. Once we got her well, she wanted to maintain that wellness. She did not want to go backwards, and we'd just make these little I'd call them my warrant of fitness checks.
Yes.
We'd go through, we'd check the body, we'd check how the body's working, and then we'd go through and we'd clear the body out.
I've got a funny story about her, because she was a great driver.
Yep.
And the way I tell the story, because I'm a politician, is that she drove every day for, what did I work it out? She drove every day for like 75 years, maybe longer.
Yep.
And never had an accident, never scratched a car, never got a ticket. And she got a bloody ticket in Auckland for speeding.
Oh, no.
And funny enough, I think it might have been coming back from one of her visits to you, and she's coming down off some hill, and all the traffic was moving quite fast, and she got pinged by a camera, and she was so angry that they pinged her. You know, she's like 5K over or 6K over, and she couldn't pay the bloody fine online, and you go into the post office, this poor old lady in her 90s with a speeding ticket. I said, you should be proud. But who's ever heard of anyone never having a speeding ticket in over 70 years of driving?
Exactly. And how could the police officer give a lady like Margaret a ticket? Come on. Yeah.
Totally.
Looking into those eyes and that softly spoken voice, you'd have to have a heart of concrete to be able to get a ticket, wouldn't you?
Of course, it's a camera, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Well, you fixed her, Jeff. And you gave my mum and dad years and years and years of good quality life, and in many ways the best years of their life, thanks to you.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that I fixed her. I mean, I think you'll find that any chiropractor will say that all we are, we're just the tools, we're the hands-on, and we let the body take care of itself. And this is where, as I said, I've got into that philosophy of what I call real health rather than sick care.
Yes.
I'm not into sick care or crisis care. I'm into what I call true health care. Trying to find the root cause, I think, is the big thing. You know, why are they sore? You know, what's happening? What's their diet like? What's their posture like? What's their mattress like? Their pillow? What's their car seat like? Their workstation, et cetera. What are they doing stress-wise? You know, so that we can try and make that correction so that correction lasts a lifetime. If we're doing sick care or crisis care, that's where I think we medicate people. You know, we find an area that's sore, we give it a bit of a rub, we might stretch it and say, see you later, see how that goes. If it's still sore, we'll try something else, you know. So I think chiropractic on the whole, and I think when you look at it, I think a lot of healthcare professionals now are adopting that model of real health and wellness, yes, rather than sickness or symptomatic care.
Yes.
And this is the problem I have, I guess, with the healthcare system. It's actually a sick care and crisis care system. And yeah, we can change that. And I heard you in your introduction there with Paul talking about Bobby Kennedy in the USA. Once he gets going, the changes will just be massive, and it'll be a ripple effect throughout the whole world. And I really sincerely hope that we can have a healthy world and a healthy population again, because we will save billions, if not trillions of dollars on the current healthcare system if we can get people healthy.
And the United States is ground zero for bad health.
Unbelievable. Yeah. They're the number one spend per capita on drug advertising and consuming of pharmaceutical drugs. Number one in the world per capita. Yet they're number 34 in the world in health outcomes. They're one of the sickest countries in the world. The obesity levels are through the roof, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, they're through the roof. And so that's telling you that they're doing something wrong. And it's not just the USA. The interesting thing here too is that there's two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical advertising, yes, on the radio or TV. Yes. And you know that. It's the USA and New Zealand. And again, if we can try and limit that or even totally get rid of it, we don't need Big Pharma spending $10 million a day on advertising telling us that we need to have their drugs or their product to be healthy. That's wrong.
Who would have thought, Jeff, that we could be on the cusp of dealing to Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Ag? I wouldn't have thought I'd see it in my lifetime.
Oh, I'm so excited with this. And don't forget Big Alcohol.
And Big Alcohol.
You know, Dr. Boyd or Professor Boyd Swinburne said, and I remember listening to him a few years ago as well, he tries to sit around policy tables with politicians, but he's just getting bullied by Big Food, Big Pharma, Big Alcohol. They sit around the policy table in Parliament and they decide policies. And he goes, we've got to get rid of them. He goes, because the so-called healthcare budget, only 0.5% of the healthcare budget is set aside for prevention. You know, things
like...
When
I was in Parliament, I was shocked that there are a lot of parties, right? Press gallery parties and, you know, the formal ones, not just having a drink at night. But the politicians would ring up the liquor industry and all the booze would turn up for them.
Yeah.
And I'd look at that and think, no, you wouldn't be sort of bought off for a few bottles of booze.
Oh, they're bought off, all right. I'll tell you,
the thing is, they get access, right? Mm. And, you know, if I deliver the booze to a party for the press gallery and the MPs, and then I ring up and say, there's a problem with this legislation, I can walk into anyone's office because I'm the person, I'm the guy that delivers the booze.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I wonder if that still happens. That's disgusting. How's your back now, Jeff?
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I'm still, still play touch. I'm 57 now, I'll be 58 in February, still play touch rugby. I've still got both my hips, both my knees, both my ankles. I'm very blessed. And so I still stay very, very active. And I'm very conscious that if I did stop, it'd be like a rusted joint.
Yeah.
It'll just seize up and it'd be so hard to get moving again. So I'm really big on just keeping moving. And depending on, you know, everybody's different fitness levels, et cetera, moving for someone might be a 500-meter walk a day, just round the block and back. For someone else, it might be, like I've got a colleague here, he's 60 years of age. On his 60th birthday, he ran 60 Ks.
Jeepers. You know,
so age is a state of mind. It really is. And you just got to get moving, keep moving.
And your business after 25 years now is established. And
very much so. It's established. I'll get, people will ring up after 10 years. I remember you from 10 years ago, re-injured myself. So I'm very lucky in that regard that I am busy. I'm fully booked up. I'm very happy in that regard. And I love doing what I'm doing, but I'm shifting now into, I guess I've got a real passion for health and what I call real health and wellness. Because health isn't really necessarily the absence of disease or the absence of symptoms. It's about vitality. It's about motivation. It's about energy levels. It's about just enjoying the quality of life. And my goal, as I say to all my patients, and I want all them to have the same goal, is to be 90 years of age and still able to kick a ball around with their great grandkids.
Wow.
That's the ultimate, because it can be done. It's not impossible. You see it all the time. But it's getting there and understanding how we can do that and what we need to do in that regard. So it involves diet and exercise, physical health, mental health, spiritual health.
And you've got an over 50 group of men that you work with and support. What's this about?
Yeah, so it's something that I started the middle of last year. It had been something that I've been thinking about for a long, long time, because, again, I get so many men coming in, they're absolutely lost. They're broken. They're physically and mentally broken. And that's because they've really let themselves go. And it's really unfortunate to see that, and it's frustrating. And I just empathize with these guys because I know what it's like to have an injury. And so what tends to happen is that they're looking for a way out. Years of abuse of the bodies, the years of hard work and toil, being the provider for the families, working 60, 70 hours a week, trying to uphold that sense, I guess, of being a man. And again, in this environment, there's someone out there probably rolling their eyes thinking toxic masculinity. I just don't understand that, because there's a real role that men should be playing in today's world. And of course, obviously not trying to not show any signs of weakness. So we're less likely to ask for help, and we're certainly less likely to seek it. So men in general, we turn to smoking, we turn to drinking heavily. We turn to quick comfort foods, often eating on the run because we're so busy. Our joints and muscles, they're just not like they once were. We're quickly tired of doing any sort of physical exercise, unless it's absolutely necessary, I guess, as part of our job. And then next thing you know, we're unfit, we're unhealthy, we're spiraling out of control, and we just can't seem to stop it. And in fact, because of our stubbornness, we accept it all as normal and as part of the aging process, and we find that we need medication then to get through, either physically or mentally or both. And then we're consigned then as another statistic: diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and dare I say it, suicide. The suicide stats are heavily favoured for men. So we live 5 years on average less than our female counterparts. And so I set about then trying to, I guess, get an idea of how I could change that. As an over 50 male myself and being in fairly good condition, I wanted other men to experience what I was experiencing. But it was pretty tough. So I set up, designed a program, I've tweaked with it. So what it involves then is it's a 50-day transformational change. And hopefully then we're trying to establish then habits of a lifetime, so that these guys then will go through the 50-day challenge. And then at the end of that, they understand they've lost weight, they're feeling better, they're more energy, they want to continue with it, and it is sustainable. Some of these other challenges out there, I think, are quite unsustainable. They're unrealistic. This one here, what I've done is it's a guided challenge, so you have to commit fully to it. And this is where my rugby coaching comes in, because I'm a bit of a hard ass in that regard. You either commit or you don't. If you don't want to commit to it, then I'll kick you out of the group. It's as simple as that. You have to commit. You have to really, really want it. And if you're there and you're committed and you want it, then you will achieve results. And the key is once you start getting rid of all your excuses, that's when you'll start finding all your results.
Is this available online through New Zealand, or do you need to be in Auckland?
No, it's online throughout the world. I mean, the last group I took on, two guys from America, one guy from Australia, so it's all done online.
And how do they find you if they're in America? What would bring them to you?
Yeah, so what I've done, because it's still early stages and I've only gone through with a few groups at this stage, the next group I'm going to take on, or I'm going to wait for that Christmas, New Year, so everybody can do all their festivities, because I know exactly what's going to happen on January 1st is that these guys are going to wake up and they go, that's it. I want to change my lifestyle. 2025 is my year. So the next one, then I'll just project. And all I do then is I just put it out on social media, and people then can sign up to it. And what we do then is we set up a private group where we put in our daily progress, our daily exercise, and then we do a weekly Zoom call where we all come in and we're all held accountable then. And we do that over 50 days. So,
it's 50 years old and over and 50.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, method to the madness there around the number 50. But 50 days, I think, is a long time. It's enough to really break bad habits and to establish good habits, and that's the key.
For men only?
Yeah, men only, and the reason being I'm not an expert on female health. Obviously, with menopause, premenopause, it just becomes too difficult then. And
does it work if a wife is listening? Can she, and her husband's a bit reluctant, you've got to get them all in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always say that you've got to get someone on board with you. Get your wife on board, your partner, whoever.
But if a wife approached you and said, look, my husband, could you help him? You'd be able to guide her to getting him on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
So how do we find you for that, Jeff?
I'm on social media. So I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on, I was going to say Twitter, it's X now.
X, and, okay. I'm going to look you up.
There you go.
I have to get on my machine because I'm on a machine here and I said it's all for Paul. So we can look you up on Facebook. We'd search on Facebook for Jeff Alley Tough 50.
Yeah, or just Jeff Alley DC on Facebook. On X, I'm just at Jeff Alley. On Instagram, I think same thing, at Jeff Alley DC.
Oh, how wonderful.
So it's a public, it's there, it's open for everyone.
How do we find you physically in Auckland if we're wanting you to look at us and we're in, like my mum was, in the Auckland area?
Yep, we're at 516 East Coast Road in Mairangi Bay, so just search up Bay's Chiropractic. And there's six chiropractors here. We've got three physiotherapists, we've got two acupuncturists, and we've got a massage therapist. So we're a busy clinic, very, very busy. And you can find me there. I'm online. That's not hard to find.
And how much do you love Christine Smith?
She's awesome. She is so good, isn't she? She's very cool. And we're very lucky to help have her. And she does only work part-time, unfortunately. Yes. We're trying to twist her arm and get her to do more hours and take on a bit more responsibility at our front desk. But patients love her because, you know, they come in, they talk to her about knitting, they talk to her about homeschooling, they'll talk to her about politics, and you know what her politics is like.
Yeah.
Very similar to ours. And we're a very open and honest clinic here, and we have some great banter amongst all of us. It's it really is a cool place to work in.
Well, you're a wonderful man. We've been talking to Jeff Alley. He's a chiropractor. I can absolutely vouch for him over many, many years. I used to sort of have what is it when you have your mum who's going on and on about another guy, and he's wonderful. not in that way, but in the sense that, hey, I'm here too, mum. I'm in the room. No, she was the greatest mum you'd ever want to have. And looked after my dad because my mum made my dad go, and he got great relief. So I can absolutely vouch for Jeff Alley. He's in Mairangi Bay. And I'm wondering about that tough 50 for myself in the new year.
I'll send you the link next time I do it, Rodney.
Please do. What a man. What a guy. Thank you, Jeff. You have a great day, and we feel truly blessed that you are on this earth with us and that you've agreed to come on our show and talk about your life, your profession, your healing, and what you can offer us to help us in life's great journey. Thank you.
It's been an honour. Thank you, Rodney, for having me.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.